my boss once, I gave him a proposal. I was supposed to go to the CEO, and it was a big proposal for a learning center we were building. But I went to my boss first. And he flips through it, and he goes to the last page, and he says, you can't ask for this. He looks at the budget, and we got in this argument. And then I stopped, and I said, you know, you read this whole thing, but you never told me what you thought about it. And because what was I looking for? I didn't have to go to him. I was looking for recognition. I was looking for acknowledgement. He says, you always do a good job. Do I have to tell you?
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Visit me on gina-friedrich.com or sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Hey, welcome to episode 8 of the Make It Your Path podcast, and thanks for tuning in again. In today's show, you will get to know Marsha Reynolds. She has just been ranked the top 3 coaching professional globally. She was the 5th president of the International Coach Federation and held top leading positions in the industry. Today, she's the expert organizations call on to breathe life into their connections, conversations, and cultures. She has trained, spoken at conferences and on the TED Talk stage, and coached leaders in more than 40 countries. Marsha is also a best-selling author with a doctorate in organization psychology, and she continues to research transformational leadership to help startups and established Fortune 500 companies prosper in today's chaotic, unpredictable world. Marsha talks us through her personal career story and explains how emotional intelligence helps us taking the right decisions and finding our individual path. We learn how our brain is stopping us from taking risks and how we can outsmart it. I also enjoyed her perspective on how a start into a new industry does not require being perfect, but being vulnerable and being okay with learning on the run. Off we go. Dear Marsha, welcome.
Thank you, Gina. I'm glad to join you.
Yeah, it's quite crazy for me, you being a pioneer in the coaching profession, an expert and huge inspiration. How did it all start? In regards to your own exciting and diverse journey that you went through yourself professionally and personally, yeah, how did you get around your field of expertise?
You know, even though I worked in a number of industries before I went out on my own, I worked in healthcare and then I moved to high tech. My focus was always on what is it that really it sparks people to learn and to change. So my second master's degree was in adult learning. And so even my work, all my work and research since then has really been about, you know, what is it that we need to create in the brain so people actually learn and grow? So I ran training departments and helped one company go successfully public, and that was all great, but I felt that there was still something more. There was something that I wanted to achieve in my area of interest and make a difference. And so when I was leaving my last job is when I read this article on coaching. And I said, you know, I like working with people one-on-one, not just in training situations. I worked with a lot of the executives that way. And so I thought I'll look into this, not knowing it was going to become my life. Yeah. And so when I started my business, I thought I was going to do a lot of training and this coaching thing on the side. So what was interesting, though, it wasn't just that I enjoyed coaching, but it fed into my research. When all the new research came out on the brain and what happens in the brain, and you know, and I got into teaching emotional intelligence. But what I was fascinated was it gave us a different perspective on how people learn. And what I've come to know is that coaching is the best technology we have for creating for people to actually make long-term behavioral change, to want to shift and grow, where otherwise they may resist it or fear it. So I, you know, I've written many books. I've got another book coming out next year on coaching and everything that I've learned in my research and what coaches do well and where they fall down and how we can overcome that, because I truly believe in the power of coaching. So it gave me my true path, but it took, you know, decades of doing things, trying things, seeing what I like before I figured that out.
So it was a journey, and
absolutely
took you a couple of different experiences, but then it felt right. It sounds like then there was the moment where you knew you're right. Was there one key aha moment that brought you closer to where you are today?
Well, I have to say the shift from corporate to coaching, the key moment was when they told me I hit the glass ceiling. So that my position didn't warrant any more promotions. I got the message. And for me, I always felt like the work I needed to do had to be significant. And in fact, my doctoral dissertation is on smart, strong women in the workplace. And what motivates us is about motion, constantly doing new things, and meaning. Whatever it is we do has to feel like it makes a difference. I got to a point where I could no longer feel that. And so even though I left a lot of unvested stock on the table, it wasn't about the money. And it was so interesting how they didn't understand that. It was time for me to go find that work that really inspired me. And now I'm you know, looking at what is it, the last 10 years of my career that I really, really want to create and leave behind. And it has to do with coaching. So I think, you know, that and the day I left, one of the VPs said, well, who will I talk to once you're gone? And I'm like, well, I'll be gone. And he said, but you're going to do this coaching thing? He says, I'll pay you to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess I'm a coach. So I realized it was real. But that was a key moment too.
Thanks for sharing this. And you were mentioning that you actually found, or you were trying to find, your true inspiration. Yeah. What helped you on this path to really find out what it is that drives you?
You know, it's interesting. When I first left my job, I bought this 24-foot camper trailer and went all over the West thinking, I'll go on a vision.
Sounds great.
Yeah, actually, in southern Arizona, there's this wonderful Chiricahua National Monument. And I was there, and the only other tourists that were there were all German. It's like they get their RVs and they take that route. That was fun. But I realized that my finding my purpose wasn't out there. I couldn't go on a vision quest and figure it out. That I could only figure it out by really paying attention to the work that I was doing. And what is it that I most love to do? And what was it was just annoying, you know, taking jobs to make money. That didn't work for me anymore. And I don't even take all clients. If it doesn't feel right that I can do my best work with them, I'll refer them to someone else. And I think the most important thing for me was that I did find emotional intelligence the same time as coaching. So I combined the two, the understanding how the brain works and how emotions impact our decision making. And I think in coaching, the most important thing we can do is even notice people's emotional shifts, because there's so many clues behind that. And recognizing that emotions are information, and they're going to give me the path that I want to be on and the path I don't want to be on. And to be real honest about that and not listen to shoulds and what people tell me what to do, but to really listen to my internal desires. Which isn't easy for us to do. It's not easy.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you what role emotional intelligence plays in personal development and in achieving one's own targets. What would you say?
Well, you know, as much as we talk about emotional triggers, and I'm right up there. I think if you Google emotional triggers, I'm up there on the first page of Google. We often think of it in terms of negative. what triggers me to say things and do things that I don't like, which is good information. You know, helps us be more effective and have a greater impact when we understand our triggers and can choose. But our triggers are also important for us to look at in terms of whatever it is we're protecting that we react, it is also something very important to us. And so to accept that as a part of who I am and what I want to do. So like, for example, I have a trigger around control. I like to control things. And I always did well in corporations. I moved to the top quickly. I saw what needed to be done. I took charge, got results. But it would show up on the dark side, like in meetings when I felt somebody was trying to take control and wasn't listening to me. Mm-hmm. But it was an indication that control is important and I'm good at it. So why should I deny it? You know, the whole concept around being a control freak. but you see, that gave me evidence that, well, if I'm good at that, why couldn't I be good at running my own business? Which I obviously have done and done well. It's a, you know, worldwide business. I travel frequently. So I looked at the light side of my triggers, of my need for attention. I love attention. I love standing on a stage. And so I developed my public speaking and I do a lot of keynote speaking now. So I looked at, you know, what am I really good at, even though it can get in the way at times, and what part of that do I really love to do? And, you know, that's not always easy to sort out on your own. That's why I think sometimes it's good to have a coach or a friend that won't tell you what to do, but just will listen and be curious to really explore that. What am I good at internally? Not what am I good at technically, but what am I good at in terms of, like I said, control, taking charge of things, doing a lot of research because I want to be a credible source. I care about people, you know, so I bring that into my work. I want to make a difference, you know, and that may shift as I age, the intensity of what I like, but it's still important for me to constantly be looking at that, which helps me then to make decisions, again, for myself, and not what other people and society says I should do. So those shoulds will kill you.
Do you manage to do that regularly all the time? Does it work for you? Because many people that are out there and have people around them that are not really supportive or that are kind of leading them into a direction that they think is the right way for them. So do you maybe have an own experience that helps others to see how they can solve that for them?
Yeah, Jean, especially family, right? People think they have our best interests, but oftentimes they're coming out of their own fear. So often when I'm coaching people and I hear the word should, it's a key for me to say, okay, you know, if those shoulds weren't in your life, what would you do? You know, like I was coaching a woman who worked for Maersk, you know, and so she was American and they had moved her around quite a bit and her husband was able to move with her and her two daughters. And she was living in Denmark and she was always aware of the disturbances that she felt she was creating in her family's life. And they offered for her to get her master's degree at Columbia, which meant she'd have more travel and more time doing homework. And she said, I can't do it. And I'm like, why can't you? Well, I should be more present with my family. Mm-hmm. I said, who created that should? How do you know? And what it came down to was, she said, well, let me ask them. And it turned out her daughters were so supportive, thought it was the coolest thing that she was going to get this degree from Columbia. And they wanted to be a part of it. They wanted to do homework with her. You know, a couple of years later, she sent me a picture of her graduation with her two daughters at her side. And she's, you know, they're back in the States now, so they've moved again. But it was a wonderful opportunity for her to explore that the belief that she had around her shoulds wasn't real. So sometimes it's not real, and sometimes it is real, but you have to really look at, so what would be the worst thing that would happen if I did this? Would it destroy these people? Probably not. Hmm. Could you negotiate with them? You know, the biggest one is well, if I don't have this job, I won't be able to support my family or contribute like I have. And, you know, we never know what's going to happen. And when I left my last job, all these people came to me saying, how do you have the courage to leave? And I'm like, what are you talking about? If it, you know, I want to try this. If it doesn't work, I'll go get a job. You know? I have experience. I have degrees. Somebody will hire me.
I just have a huge smile on my face while I'm listening to you. Yeah. I had exactly the same discussions with people about my situation now.
Mm. No, I know. And it's like they're coming out of their fear. And fear is foggy until you break it down. Until you say, what's the worst that could happen? How likely will that happen? And what will you do if that happens? Three questions. What's the worst that can happen? How likely will that happen? And what will you do if that happens? And usually people realize that they can take greater risks than they thought.
Yeah, it's those questions that usually we cannot ask ourselves, right?
No, I mean, that's what I found in my research that, you know, we don't coach ourselves well. We block it. Our ego does. And so we think we have good reasons when they're only rationalizations. And it's an interesting phenomenon. The behavioral economics people, Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow, and some of the neuroscientists, Michael Gazzaniga, in his book on free will, you know, both of them said, we don't self-reflect, we don't question ourselves, we kind of don't even have free will with our brain controls us. But if somebody external to us just reflects back and says, so here's the belief I hear you saying, what do you think about that? How do you know that's true? Just asking those questions actually is so much more powerful in breaking through our fears and our beliefs than trying to do it ourselves.
In your opinion, what is the number one blockade that stops people from identifying and following their own individual path? I mean, you just mentioned this should as a word mm-hmm. that we use when we talk to ourselves, but what else is there? Or what is the key thing that you identified from your praxis that stops people from following their path?
Well, you know, there's the old fear of failure and fear of success things. I have to say that women are a little bit more susceptible to this than men. Although women tend to change jobs more frequently, they stay within their path. There's this thing where they believe I must be perfect or at least extremely competent before I try something. And you laugh.
I do.
Right. So there's that. Yeah. Which is crazy. You know, I think I got it from my parents, but when I changed industries, I never knew anything about the industry I was going into. They hired me for my expertise in training development and organizational design. They weren't hiring me for their industry expertise. So I was okay being vulnerable, not knowing anything about technically what they were doing and learning. But few people are like that. They think they have to stay in their lane or research and understand everything before they move on. And it's just not true. We can do it on the run.
What would you recommend a person being in this situation?
Well, there's always the challenge of, you know, so if you were brave, what would you do? You know, so the taking the leap. Is it, you know, again, it's the same thing. What's the worst that can happen? And what will you do? Like I said, well, I'm going to go start my business. If it doesn't work, I'll go get a job. Or I live in my travel trailer and run around the country. You know, I'll find something else. My first coach said something to me that stuck with me forever. I was asking him how much money and energy I should put into marketing my first book, Outsmart Your Brain. Mm-hmm. He said, well, don't put everything into it. This is just one chapter. You're going to be writing many more and doing many more things. And I didn't see that far into the future. I'm like, really? Oh, well, that's fascinating. And so we do. We have many chapters that we can live through. So why would we think that this is the end of the road?
You just mentioned Outsmart Your Brain. It's one of your books, but it's also like, yeah, you offer programs for leaders and you teach individuals and also executive teams on how to better connect and hold mind-changing conversations, as you call it, also difficult ones. And you also write about it on the Psychology Today blog. I'm just thinking the way, the not always empowering and appreciative way we communicate with ourselves. Where do you see a valuable link between this and unfolding one's own potential towards shaping the own future?
Yeah. In Outsmart Your Brain, of understanding first and foremost that your brain isn't always your best friend. Your brain's primary purpose is to protect you and keep you safe. And that's why we rationalize so well and we don't take risks, because the brain says, no, I'm not going to do that. So we have to override our brain and say, you know, chill out, brain. It's okay. I can try this. And then you have to like trick your brain. At the end of every day, you have to say what went well today, not what didn't go well. You see, we focus on the negative and then the brain says, oh, I will protect you. I don't want you to try these things anymore. So if we focus on the positive, we give our brain evidence that I can be successful at this, then the brain will support us. So we really have to keep looking at what are my strengths? What is it that I'm doing well, even if there's things that aren't working, but what am I doing well? We have to keep this focus and appreciating our work and ourselves. So the brain then shifts to support us as well. And it's the same thing with holding difficult conversations, which was my last book, The Discomfort Zone, that we have to, again, look at what is the great value of this conversation? What are the greatest strengths I have to achieve it? And when it's over, you know, you're going to make mistakes, but don't focus on that. Focus on what went well this time. What did I do good? And that's, you know, something we just don't have the habit of doing.
Marcia, I think that it was in the TED Talk that you were stating that knowledge does not change behavior. You were demonstrating that by asking the audience and, yeah, getting the proof that almost everyone has something in life they're not doing, even though they know they should. But if knowledge does not change behavior, what does change behavior?
Yeah. I know, isn't that an interesting thing? We think, oh, we read all
tell
these
us,
articles.
Please tell us.
Yeah, we read all these articles online and people tell us, you know, good things to do and then we don't do it. I mean, you know, even in the medical field, if you tell someone, if you don't do this, you'll die, they'll do it for a week and then they don't do it anymore. So, yeah, we all have things we know we should do, but we don't. So it's not about giving people knowledge. That's use of the cognitive brain. It doesn't rewire our brains. We have to move into the middle brain. You know, this is why it's good to have someone else to talk to, because we don't do that well on our own. We just stay in the soupy mess of the cognitive brain and then, you know, again, rationalize our choices. So going in terms of like looking at our future, of asking questions that trigger emotions. You know, what is it you most love to do? If you were to visualize your perfect day, working day, from the moment you wake up till you go to sleep, what would you see? You know, and then how does that compare to what you have today? With no excuses. You know, we don't have to change right away, but we can move toward our greatest vision. Again, think questions like, you know, if you were courageous, what would you do? You know, that help us to feel our courage, to feel our desire, and not just look at things in a logical way. And again, this is like brain science. It's not just nice feeling good and woo-woo and all of that, even if a leader was talking to an employee about their future, those are the questions you'd want to ask.
To support development and help people finding their individual...
To choose what they want to do. Not what they think is going to get them, you know, the greatest promotion, because oftentimes they fail if it's not something they really want to do. They get bored, they get frustrated, they get annoyed if they're doing work they don't want to do.
I'm just wondering, I mean, you're the expert with all the emotional intelligence topics. Mm-hmm. Is there still something that triggers you?
No, you know, I'm a human. You know, it's an interesting thing. Of course I get triggered. My triggers are just not as intense as some other people, but except for dealing with family, they trigger me all the time. But, you know, it's not about not being reactive. It's about what you do once you react. And that's what emotional intelligence is. It's intelligence comes from the Greek word intelligere, which means choice. So once I recognize I have an emotional reaction, I can say, well, what's that about? And look at what is it I expected to get that I didn't, or I'm afraid I won't get. So most, unless it's big fear, you know, physical fear, fight or flight, most of our reactions are based on social needs. It's our mammalian brain, our need to be comfortable being with others. We're not really good at being by ourselves for very long. But we all, again, what I said earlier in this conversation, the things that made you successful, so they're good, end up being your triggers. So big ones I often see are like the need for respect. So if I feel you disrespected me, whether you intended it or not, I get triggered. Well, if I understand that, I can look to see, is this something I need to ask for, or can I let it go? You know, so like my boss once, I gave him a proposal. I was supposed to go to the CEO, and it was a big proposal for a learning center we were building. But I went to my boss first. And he flips through it and he goes to the last page and he says, you can't ask for this. He looks at the budget and we got in this argument. And then I stopped and I said, you know, you read this whole thing, but you never told me what you thought about it. Because what was I looking for? I didn't have to go to him. I was looking for recognition. I was looking for acknowledgement. He says, you always do a good job. Do I have to tell you? Okay, so there was my chance just to ask for what I needed. Yes, you have to tell me. I need to hear that now and then. And the funny thing, he says to me, well, you never tell me when I do a good job. So we realized we needed to give each other this. We all need that. We all need acknowledgement, recognition in some way. And so, of course, it hurts when I do something and people don't acknowledge it or they find fault in it. And like even my Psychology Today posts, when somebody says, you know, bad comments like, oh, you're so stupid and you missed this and you didn't know that, I have to breathe. Yeah, and say, okay, that's fine. Other people liked it. Do I need to explain myself or not? So, of course, we all get triggered because it's a middle brain function and it's based on social needs. But the thing is to recognize I'm being triggered and then ask, what do I need to do about it?
Yeah, being aware of something that is happening, that is triggering you, and then sitting in the little helicopter, looking at the situation and taking a different perspective and maybe giving it a different meaning by that, or at least being aware. I realized that not only coaching, which I also benefited from a lot, but also meditation helped me a lot on that. Realizing when certain emotions pop up, it changes a lot. Yeah. Thanks for sharing all this. You were mentioning being successful. How do you define success?
You know, that's a great question, Gina. Because I think forever we looked at success as money. But it was interesting, the founder of the coaching school I went to, a significant moment for me was when he said, you know, financial independence isn't being necessarily wealthy, it's just not having any bills. So if you pay off your debt, you're free to do whatever you want. And I realized that I don't have to like make a ton of money. I just don't have to owe anybody anything. And so I did. I paid off my bills, which allows me then to not have that excuse of saying, well, I have to make money. You know, now it's like, yeah, but I need to make money for my retirement here in the U.S., you know. And I don't have a pension. So there is that, but I'm so focused on what I want to do, it's okay. It's more a matter of how many more years do I want to work hard, which I love. So probably I will for a long time. So success for me is that I love the work I do, and I feel really fulfilled that I'm making a difference for people, and people appreciate my contribution. But different people define it differently. So like I told you, I found in my research that for women, it was far more important. Although I see this changing, that men have this too, that mm-hmm. I have frequent new challenges. So they change jobs more often. I don't want to get bored. I want to do new things. I want to learn. But whatever I choose to do has to make a difference. So it isn't about titles and money. And that's really shifting. It isn't about that anymore. It's about, do I enjoy my work? Am I learning and growing? And am I making a difference?
And I'm sure you would answer this question with yes.
Yeah, and I hope that for all of you and the people listening.
I think what you were just sharing, and all, I mean, the expertise, the insights, the experiences were super valuable. Thanks so much, Marcia, for sharing all this with us. I really appreciate that you took the time, and super excited about the new book you mentioned that is coming up. I will, of course, put the link to your website and also to the existing books already into the show notes. So everyone who wants to learn a bit more about what Marcia shared with us today. Marcia, thanks a lot. I'm wishing you a great vacation. What is funny is that you're going on vacation to somewhere where it's not that hot.
Yeah.
That is quite crazy coming from Germany, but I wish you a lot of cold weather and
a lot of fun. Thank you. You too.
I hope to speak to you again soon.
I do too. Thank you.
Bye, Marcia.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode and don't want to miss out on any of the following inspiring guests, make sure you sign up for this podcast on Apple or Android Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, or TuneIn. I'm looking forward to next time and hope you'll be here with me again. Bye.